Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The show must go on. That was the takeaway from the Clackamas County Fair Board's meeting at Horning Hall in Canby Thursday, at which it was voted unanimously to move forward with both the 2021 Fair and Canby Rodeo. The fair, Canby's largest annual event, drawing hundreds of thousands from across the state, was canceled last year due to the gathering size restrictions associated with the coronavirus pandemic. But this year, with dwindling case counts and the vaccine rollout nearing the state's goal of 70%, many large events are returning to the summer calendar, including most county fairs. After giving a brief status update about the budget, food, and entertainment vendors and the county's coronavirus metrics, Fairgrounds Executive Director Lori Bothwell recommended that the board move forward. "I've done a lot of fairs," Bothwell said. "We've been through 100-degree weather that wasn't budgeted or expected, and we have survived. I think we can survive this very easily." Bothwell based her recommendation primarily on the vaccination rates at the state and county level, and estimates that both metrics would meet their respective 70 and 65% goals by the end of this month. Clackamas County needs to vaccinate fewer than 5,000 people to hit its target, while the statewide goal is now under 90,000. "We're so close. I think it would be a big mistake to not move forward with both the fair and rodeo," she said. "The phone is ringing off the hook for both." The event will look different, Bothwell confirmed. Most of the large tents have been canceled this year, and the stages are being consolidated to save money in the uncertain fiscal environment. There will be a traditional talent show and other entertainment. The fair's carnival vendor, Funtastic Traveling Shows, has altered its practices amid the pandemic at smaller events that were allowed to go ahead in other states, selling passes that cover a certain time window rather than number of rides. The Midway will actually be larger this year, Bothwell predicted, with two more rides than have been included in earlier fairs. "I've been talking to a lot of fair managers, and a lot of them have expanded their carnival," she said. "In talking with Funtastic, they've been doing some of the smaller fairs up in Washington, and their sales have doubled so far this year." The level of excitement for this year's fair, in and even outside the communities, unlike anything Bothwell and her team have seen. "I think this could be our biggest fair ever," she said. "The phone has been ringing off the hook. Everyone really wants us to do the fair and rodeo this year." The Clackamas County Fair and Canby Rodeo will be held August 17th through the 21st at the County Fairgrounds in Canby. Tickets are expected to go on sale within the week and may be purchased online at clackamascountyfair.com. The beloved event is more than a century-old tradition in Clackamas County, which has been held annually since 1907, with the only exceptions being in the 1917-18 during World War I, in 1942-45 during World War II, and in 2020. Most people will tell you that Canby High School held two graduations for the class of 2021 on Friday night, but the truth is there were actually three. After the two main events at 6 and 8 p.m. at Cougar Stadium, a third, much smaller and unsanctioned event was held for seven senior boys who met all the qualifications to graduate but were denied the chance to walk with their classmates due to COVID-19 protocols. The seven were prohibited from school facilities and activities after being exposed to a student who later tested positive for COVID-19. The students had attended a Canby basketball game Thursday night, and photos of the crowd identified the seven boys who had been in close proximity. But angry parents say that the administration's decision was unfair, unscientific, and completely illogical, according to the parents. For one thing, the student had also attended graduation rehearsal earlier Thursday and participated in the other rites of passage, like leaving a handprint on the designated class of 2021 hall, which would have exposed more than just the 17s who were excluded. Also, one of the seven boys, Kyle Sander, had a twin brother, Cade, who was allowed to walk with their classmates. "We show up at the graduation, one twin's on the blacklist, and one gets to go through, so where's the science in that?" mother Shonda Wright asked. "They sleep in the same room. None of this makes sense." Wright described what sounded like a chaotic scene Friday night as a stadium slowly filled with parents, family members, and friends, and other students lined up nearby to start the processional. Cade comes out crying, saying they're not letting Kyle in, Wright recalled. "They humiliated Kyle in front of all of his classmates. I couldn't believe what was happening. They came into this world together. They went through school together, and now they don't get to graduate together?" Wright said she and the other parents tried to offer various compromises that would have allowed the boys to participate, such as wearing masks or sitting in the back, far from removed from the other classmates, but to no avail. Administrators could not be reached for comment Sunday, but they appear to have been following the strict quarantine protocols directed by Clackamas County Public Health, which requires anyone in close contact with a confirmed positive case to remove themselves from classes and any school-sanctioned events for 14 days. These protocols were established before the return to in-person learning in March and April. They do not appear to offer any exemptions for special events, including graduation scenarios. For Wright and the other parents, it was the straw that broke the camel's back, a bubbling over of months of frustration of the pandemic and related restrictions have brought, particularly for public school students and families. "Kyle was crying at that point, and I told them, look at him," recalled Wright, who lives in Idaho and made the six-hour drive to watch the ceremony. "This is what our children have been doing through the year. This is what parents have to deal with at home, and enough is enough. You guys can't continue to do this to kids. They've been going to Canby for 13 years, and in 4 hours, you have just destroyed it." Afterwards, a staff member turned the stadium lights off to signal the end of the ceremony, then switched them back on 20 minutes later. A handful of Canby School District employees, along with their parents and about 30 classmates, had stayed behind to give the boys a small taste of pomp and circumstance. Two Canby School Board members, Don Deppner and Stephanie Carlson, also stayed late to congratulate the boys as they strode across the stage at around 9:30 p.m. "We had a stand-up educator who handed them their diplomas," said Deppner, who made clear in a phone interview she was speaking only for herself. "Steph and I shook their hands and tried to give them the exact same experience that they missed out on with all their friends. I just felt like it was the right thing to do," she continued. "These kids worked really hard for their graduation. They did all the right things. They've been through so much with COVID. They deserved to walk. In my eyes, there were three graduations that night, and I'm glad that there were." Several walking trails, including a portion of the popular Forest Road Logging Trail and the Echo Park Disc Golf Course, are being closed due to a possible bear sighting in North Canby, officials confirmed Saturday. That morning, area resident Rosemary Hands reported finding a pile of scat on the walking trail that connected Spitz Road to the logging road trail near Echo Park, which the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife later confirmed was consistent with bear droppings. An Oregon state trooper with the Fish and Wildlife Division, who also reviewed the droppings and other evidence in the case, told local police that it appears the bear had been staying in the area. Hans told the Canby Courant that she had seen a large black bear almost 1 week earlier, Sunday, June 6th, on the opposite bank of the Willamette River near the unfinished 50,000 square foot mansion property started by Hollywood Video founder Mark Wattles. He was a good sized big bear walking on the Peach Cove beach. She recalled, "It was not a quick sighting. I watched him for probably 50 yards just ambling along the beach. It was definitely a bear and a big one." Hans said she had never seen a bear in the 21 years she has lived in her home off South Dutch Vista Court, which overlooks the Willamette River. Canby Police Chief George Stroh said he also does not recall a bear ever being sighted in Canby. "We've had cougar sightings before, but this is the first time I remember a bear being reported in Canby." Stroh said, "Closed due to bear sighting signs are being placed on the logging road north of the city shops, in Echo Park, and along the Spitz Road Trail. City staff will be working with the county and ODFW to humanely trap and relocate the animal." The chief said residents should be mindful of the possible danger. "We just want people to use caution when close to that area," he said. "Be aware of your surroundings. If you do see a bear, call Canby Police or Clackamas County Dispatch. The non-emergency dispatch for both the county and Canby Police can be reached at 503-655-8211. And if you are in immediate danger, call 911. In an unprecedented move, Thursday, Representative Mike Dearman, Republican, Independence, became the first member ever expelled from the Oregon legislature, following new revelations about his foreknowledge and deliberate role in helping armed demonstrators breach the Capitol last December. The vote to remove him from office was 59-1, with only Dearman himself opposed. Prior security footage showed that on December 21st, Dearman had opened the doors of the building, which was closed to the public at the time, to armed right-wing protesters who went on to clash violently with police in the halls of the state capitol. Dearman's actions were criticized by most of his House colleagues, including Republican allies such as Minority Leader Christine Drazen of Canby. But some, including Drazen, said they did not believe he had intended to allow people into the Capitol, until new footage emerged that showed Dearman sharing his cell phone number with Polk County constituents and outlining in broad strokes how he would aid the effort to breach the building, a plan he called Operation Hall Pass. In an interview on OPB's Think Out Loud Thursday, Drazen explained how the new revelations had changed her view, saying she believes people might have been killed without the quick intervention of law enforcement. "Public service is a calling, and we have got to begin to hold ourselves to a higher standard," Drazen said. "His actions do not meet that standard." Drazen said she agreed with what she still believes was Dearman's motivating principle, that the public should have greater access to legislative proceedings during the pandemic, but that he had shown terrible judgment in exercising that principle by empowering a violent mob to breach Capitol security. If Dearman had, instead, arranged for a group of peaceful demonstrators to enter the building and display signs of protest, she would have supported that as an act of civil disobedience, she said. Dearman was already under criminal investigation for his actions, but the new video appeared to be the final straw for the House Republican caucus, which on Monday united in a renewed call for him to step down. In the OPB interview, Drazen called for the expulsion vote on the House floor a dramatic loss for our state, which she'd hoped to avoid by encouraging Dearman to do the right thing and resign. When he refused, the House took appropriate action, according to House Majority Leader Barbara Smith Warner, Democrat, Portland, given the gravity of former Representative Dearman's blatant actions. "He caused a genuine safety risk for every person in the building, especially to our Jewish and Black Indigenous people of color, or BIPOC, legislators and Capitol staff," she said. Prior to the vote, the bipartisan House Special Committee on December 21st unanimously approved House Resolution 3, which resolved that Dearman engaged in disorderly behavior and should be expelled from the legislature. It's impossible to overstate the seriousness of what took place on December 21st, said Representative Paul Hovey, Democrat Eugene, who chaired the special committee. Drazen also sat on the committee as one of its three Republican members. The committee that approved this expulsion resolution conducted a fair process that took into account all available facts and evidence. Due process is essential given the significance of today's vote, and the committee acted accordingly. More than 65% of adults in Clackamas County have received at least the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, officially moving the county and its businesses and entertainment venues into the lowest and least restrictive tier of the governor's reopening matrix. That move means indoor occupancy for Clackamas County's restaurants, bars, gyms, theaters, and other entertainment venues can increase to up to 50% of maximum capacity effective immediately. For many businesses, it's the closest they've come to normal occupancy and operations since the pandemic began 15 months ago. And because it's based on vaccination rates, a single direction metric, there is not risk of a whiplash return to increased restrictions, which happened multiple times when the reopening matrix were based on case counts and new infections. Governor Kate Brown confirmed the move in a statement Saturday morning, having hinted that such a change was imminent during her press briefing the day before. "I would like to thank everyone in Clackamas County who worked so hard to make this possible," said Brown. "This truly was a community-wide effort, and thank you to everyone who's gotten vaccinated. You are protecting yourself, your loved ones, and your community from COVID-19. The county met the criteria for low risk by achieving a 65% first dose vaccination rate for adults and submitting an equity plan to the state. When county movements for this week were announced on Tuesday, Clackamas was just shy of the 65% mark and has made a concerted push since then," Brown said. "Clackamas County's public health nurses administered over 1,000 vaccines to homebound residents and worked with all 10 school districts in the county to bring the vaccine directly to those schools for students and families. According to data from the Oregon Health Authority, Clackamas County's percent change in people vaccinated over the past week was the highest in the state. This is great news for Clackamas County residents and businesses," Clackamas County Commissioner's Board Chair Tootie Smith said in a news release. "I'd like to express my thanks to our local business community and residents for their sacrifices as they worked to reduce the spread of COVID-19 in our community. I am hopeful that with our collective efforts, we will soon be able to fully reopen and get back to business," Smith said. The next big push from public health officials is to reach 70% statewide, which would abolish the risk level system entirely, as well as the mask mandate in most places, allowing bars, restaurants, gyms, theaters, and other indoor venues to operate at 100% capacity. Brown has frequently described that eventuality as the full reopening of the state's economy. COVID-19 still remains a serious health risk for residents who have not yet been vaccinated, Clackamas County Public Health Director Philip Mason Joyner warned. "Now, 98% of the people who are hospitalized with COVID-19 are unvaccinated. We recommend everyone get vaccinated as soon as they can to avoid getting sick."
Hey Tyler, I was reading an article the other day and I saw that 53% of Americans say they value technology even more since the COVID outbreak.
Oh yeah, I think I saw that article in Obvious News Weekly.
Okay, you don't have to be mean.
Seriously though, it is true. I know that I can't function anymore without all of my connected devices. And I heard that DirectLink saw a huge spike in internet traffic after the stay-at-home order began last year.
Yeah, it's a good thing DirectLink works hard to provide constant, reliable broadband service even during tough weather, peak use hours, and that big jump in increased demand.
Right, and we need access to a quality connection more than ever. We're working from home, the kids are still distance learning, and I've even had a few online doctor's appointments.
Yeah, not only that, but so many of our entertainment options have gone virtual. They're streaming TV shows and movies, Zoom game nights, and online gaming, so people really need reliable internet.
Wait. With all of that extra online activity going on, don't we have to worry about usage limits and high bills from using too much data?
Come on, Tyler. How many times have we been over this? DirectLink doesn't have data caps and doesn't charge extra fees for high usage. It says so right there on their website. Visit directlink.coop today to learn more. Clackamas County and Canby entered the low-risk category of the governor's reopening framework over the weekend. Joining us now to talk about that development is Kyle Lang, the director of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back, Kyle.
Hey, Frankie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this change is a big deal for businesses. It means that for the first time since the pandemic started 15 months ago, and especially restaurants and bars and the hospitality industry, theaters, entertainment venues can be open to 50% capacity for the first time since the pandemic started. Am I wrong or am I crazy in feeling like this kind of went a little more under the radar than it seems like you would expect it to have?
Yeah, I was surprised that people weren't kind of clamoring and cheering and rising up and throwing little parties in celebration of the fact that we kind of hit this metric.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that is? I did talk to a few business owners. I imagine you probably have. They felt like, you know, they kind of hit their rhythm since things started to reopen, since the vaccine and the things, people started to feel more comfortable about getting out, spending money and things like that. And just felt like this really didn't change things very much.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, it doesn't in certain capacities.
Yeah.
Change much for the way in which people are operating. I think we're going to see kind of seating and capacity limits and whatnot carry well into the future for these businesses, simply for multiple reasons. One, we're kind of used to it.
Yeah.
And for some people, it's actually been a boon to their business. They've actually enjoyed maybe some of the outside seating capacity that they developed over the course of COVID, but also for staffing.
Yeah.
You know, it's still hard to find folks right now. And so we might see this be the status quo until people can really ramp up and get staffed up.
Okay. Okay. So really that's kind of the bigger drag right now. Not even the restrictions or the pandemic, but just the labor market.
Yeah. Oh, it's very real. I mean, folks are struggling to find staff, find people who are ready to return to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us more about that, because we've done a couple of stories. I think there have been numerous stories, I should say, in media outlets, a lot of it around restaurants and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be everywhere. I was talking to Millar's. They're having trouble finding people to come turn wrenches to change tires and whatnot. I mean,
yeah. In our work as the Clackamas County Business Recovery Center, we deal with a lot of different businesses who have many various needs. But staffing is increasingly becoming the, you know, number one with a bullet.
Yeah.
Rising the charts. And so it doesn't really matter what industry. You look in our industrial park, people in the industrial park are hiring. Millar's is hiring.
Yeah.
Restaurants, hospitality, they're hiring. I mean, it really is becoming difficult to find people. And the argument I always hear people put forward is, well, we're overpaying people to stay home.
Right.
And
yeah, that criticism that it's the boosted unemployment payments that folks are making more money being on unemployment than they would working a job. So why would they come back to work?
Right. And while I think there is merit to that complaint, I think it's an oversimplification of actually where we find ourselves. I think childcare, the lack of childcare for maybe a family that would normally be a two-income family is a problem. Children's school schedules up until this point. I know we were just kind of out the backside of graduations in certain districts and whatnot. But, you know, having kids on wonky schedules, it's really hard for two-income families to make that balance. And so childcare is a huge part of it. There's a skills gap for a lot of folks in between the type of skills they need to hire and the people who are actually out there on the job market.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of forces at play there.
Yeah. Yeah. The school, I mean, if you think about it, this whole year, basically every couple of weeks, every month, it would be a different situation as far as kids having to be at home, kids doing hybrid. You know, even when things started to open up a little more and they were, quote unquote, back to school, I mean, they were still in most places doing this hybrid schedule where it was like 3 hours on,
right.
You know, and then the rest of the day off. That doesn't accommodate a work schedule.
And by the time we got there, you know, people were really kind of staring down the barrel of summer's coming.
Right.
And so am I going to go out and try and start something and then have my kids home for the entirety of the summer? It's really going to be the guarantee of kids being full time back in school next school year, I think, but before we're going to really see some of those folks returning to work. So, you know, probably September, which kind of coincides with some of those benefits expiring and whatnot anyway. Yeah.
And one thing that I've heard quite a bit and increasingly is that some folks just found better gigs or they're during the pandemic when there were only remote or work from home type things. You know, they weren't just skating on unemployment. They were finding different jobs. And turns out that they kind of like that situation a little more than maybe their previous gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've had multiple employers tell me that they've had they're like ready to open the office and bring everybody kind of back into cohabitated office space and
offices and, here in Canby are and getting a little pushback.
Yeah, and some of the workers are just kind of like, you know, I'm good where I'm at, and I'm good at staying home, and and so there's a little tension between those forces. You know, some industries found greater worker productivity when they were at home.
Yeah.
Others didn't. You know, it's literally a case by case basis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of fascinating, the very long and maybe permanent effects that this pandemic might have on our job market.
Yeah. I mean, I've been going to, workforce events and conferences and things of this nature for, since I've taken this position. And we've been talking about the future of work for years. And COVID just kind of like sped up the timeline.
Yeah.
For what people were seeing as being kind of the future realities of the workforce. No commutes, people working from home, digital commuting, those types of things.
So, wherever we have you on the pod, Kyle, we always love to make you do predictions. So
we
can laugh at how wrong you are. No,
yeah, exactly.
But what do you think?
I'm a failed Cassandra.
Let's talk specifically about like the hospitality industry, restaurants and bars.
Yep.
Do you think that we will see just a longer delay, but an eventual return more or less to normal as the unemployment, the increased unemployment payments go away and folks, slowly decide, get nostalgic and, I kind of did like, working down at the restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
But do you think that it'll just be kind of a staggered and slower return? Or do you think that we will see some permanent effects where pay, on a more permanent basis is going to have to increase to be able to bring back some of these positions to entice some people back?
I do think we're going to see
or pay benefits something
benefits greater incentives to
we're
draw
already seeing
to draw
like
people
temporary
back.
Signing bonuses, which is kind of a trip for lots of jobs.
Yeah, for industries that may have never had them before.
So
I do think we're going to see some of those incentives become a little bit more commonplace, at least as we go through this recovery. The thing that's encouraging here is that this is because of recovery. We've had so much pent up demand for so long.
Yeah.
And credit is at its lowest ever. And people with reserves, their reserves are the highest in a long time.
Yeah.
People are ready to spend money and to get out. So it's encouraging that restaurants and all of these places will be very busy.
Yeah.
That they will rebound, that they will recover. But it is going to be a road and people are going to need to be kind of patient as we kind of let the chips fall where they may and kind of sort through what recovery looks like. And you're going to start seeing, price increases. We're already seeing kind of inflation and other forces at play in the market. And so, be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my thought or my positive spin, it's a bummer that, there's yet another challenge now on these small business owners that have already faced so much. Now you have to figure out a very drastically changed job market and figure out how to get people to come back to work. But if you had to pick a group of folks who you would guess would have the creativity and the dedication, right, to be able to deal with those curveballs, it would be the group that's been doing that for the past 15 months and doing it so well.
Right. I mean, I come from restaurants and hospitality. If there's one skill that somebody who works in that industry needs is the ability to think on your feet.
Yeah.
And the ability to adapt.
Yeah.
And
still do it with a smile most of the time. Which
graciously.
Is the most stunning thing to me. It's like, you can swear, as we're talking, and they're like, oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we got this. But also at the same time, I have to say, it is so encouraging right, events are coming back. You know, fairs coming forward. The Wild Hair Concert Series has launched.
We had an in-person graduation. Two of them.
Two in-person graduations. The Independence Day is getting a little event put together. You know, all of these things are coming back online. And I have to tell you that I talked to so many other economic development and chamber people about their communities and how they've reeled. And Canby, we're doing okay.
Really?
We are supporting our small businesses. And that's just not anecdotal testimony. I mean, people have really been able to navigate it well due to the efforts of our residents. And we're in a much better place than, you know, quite a few communities that kind of surround us.
My thought, or, you know, my uneducated opinion of, you know, we were a little bit, especially when you look at downtown, we're a little bit on a lower part of the valley. You know, we were kind of on the way up, but we weren't overbuilt or anything in terms of our businesses, which before the pandemic was like a bad thing and something we were working on. But when the pandemic did hit, that meant we had, I think, a lot less casualties, a lot fewer casualties, and a lot less collateral damage than we might have had. And now, you know, as things are trending up anyway, and we were already going to be kind of on an upswing, we're really well positioned for that, actually.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I get calls for office space and retail space and hospitality space at least once a week, if not more, over the course of the, like, maybe the last two months.
New businesses, moving businesses. Yeah.
All of the above. All of them.
That's great. That's
new
really
concepts. So I feel like we were actually, like you said, at the perfect kind of point in our life cycle to be able to hit pause without like total catastrophe. And then now we're kind of, we're hitting play again in terms of the rejuvenation and the development of our downtown. And it's like we haven't skipped a beat. We're really jamming.
Nice.
So
nice. And we haven't talked much about our especially commercial landlords, but that's good news for them as well, because they've certainly had a challenging year and a half as well.
Right.
And in the last few minutes, Kyle, are there obviously we've talked kind of overall about events and things coming back, but tell us about the chamber itself. And I know you have your golf tournament coming up this summer, and
yeah,
some
couple
other things
of them
going on. How give us a chamber update.
A chamber update. Okay. We're doing strong. We're really moving back out into outreach and into growing our membership. And so we're always looking for new businesses to join our community to build the strength of our network. We have some fun things coming up. We have our Swinging Good Time golf tournament on July 30th out at Frontier Golf Course. And then we have our annual chamber golf tournament September 30th out at Willamette Valley Country Club. So two different opportunities. Both are a lot of fun. They're very different events, but both are a lot of fun.
Nice.
Let's see, what else do we got going on? We have our Best of Canby promotion that we're rolling out award winners right now, and the magazine will be hitting here shortly.
I heard you got some really talented people to write for that.
I did. Thanks to the Canby Current for providing some content and some photos for that magazine publication.
Oh, I wasn't fishing for that. You misread me, but fair enough.
Oh, so that was a compliment. That was a compliment for me since I wrote the rest of the magazine.
You said it.
Okay.
It's
right
on record.
Perfect. Yeah. So it's either you or me is all I'm saying. Either way, highly talented. Yeah, so the magazine's coming out. We're coming up on the end of the legislative session. The chamber has taken position on almost 40 different business-related pieces of legislation, communicated that to our reps and our senators. So we're always fighting for our local businesses on that front. Working with local events to bring summer back.
Yeah.
We're bringing summer back.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, the legislative session has been a little under the radar, I feel, just with everything that's been going on. People had so many other things to complain about that Salem wasn't quite as much of a needed target.
Right. We all had, lots of other cannon fodder. Yeah. It's been interesting. It's been a very quiet session.
Has it?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's part of it too then.
Yeah. And one would think that being online, having the legislature be online, it's actually a great opportunity for like rural areas to provide feedback because they don't have to travel all the way to Salem and to provide face-to-face testimony. So it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if some of these tools remain as part of our legislative process to give people from rural areas a greater voice within the state legislature.
Nice.
But yeah,
And like, let's just give a little shout out to I see quite a few, more than you would think, especially, you know, things seem so divided right now, just at the state level, at the federal level, quite a few bills. I don't know if it's a record or anything, but that had like almost unanimous support, or like at least decent bipartisan support, which is really cool to see.
Yeah. It's funny. Once they're on camera and on microphones and kind of outside of of the legislative chamber, it seems more tumultuous than I think sometimes it is on the inside. But that isn't to say that there aren't their fair share of battles.
Sure.
But
all right, Kyle. Well, really appreciate having you on as always. How can folks connect with the chamber to find out about those golf tournaments or anything else? If they have questions for you about membership or anything like that, or if they're just eager to move to Canby with their very lucrative businesses.
So. Love it. Yeah, we love new businesses. So www.canbyareachamber.com for our website, and go to the community calendar for any of our events. Otherwise, you can reach us at chamber@canbyareachamber.org if you have any questions, or 503-266-4600 if you just want to chat.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Yep. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time, and sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me. Three generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? We have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Police Beat for the week's, well, basically the month of April, the first half of it at least. On March 30th at 7:09 a.m., report of criminal mischief after an unknown person drove over a stop sign and metal post at a school. At 11:50 a.m., a person reportedly trying to sell a handgun and controlled substances on social media sites was located and arrested for distribution of a controlled substance. A replica handgun was located in their possession at the time of arrest. So, if you bought a handgun on Facebook, probably was a fake. It always is. At 2:48 p.m., response to a disturbance after a person reportedly stopped their vehicle and pulled down a pole holding political flags that were being sold near Redwood Street and 99E. The suspect was cited for criminal mischief 2 and disorderly conduct 2. The person selling the flags advised they would not return to that area again. Thank goodness, because reselling flags, man, that's the big one. That and hitting parked cars in Canby. On March 31st at 6:52 p.m., response to a report of an aggressive person under the influence of intoxicants banging on the door of a business. The suspect was arrested on multiple outstanding warrants and for resisting arrest and being really super annoying too, right? On April 3rd at 11:37 p.m., an unlicensed driver was stopped for speeding. Two heavily intoxicated passengers were also in the vehicle. The driver was arrested for multiple outstanding warrants for previous DUI and reckless endangerment, forgery, and for giving false information to a police officer. The passengers were offered a ride, but refused. On April 5th at 9:36 a.m., response to a report of criminal mischief after a resident reported someone had knocked down a sign that was near their front door. On April 6th at 9:04 a.m., report of a hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. Because of course, we gotta start April the right way, people. We gotta take out those parked vehicles, or else they're gonna get us. At 10:23 p.m., a bicyclist was arrested for felon in possession of a restricted weapon. All right, yeah, that's just random. Bicyclists, that's fun. On April 8th at 6:45 p.m., response to a report of two individuals punching and causing damage to a parked vehicle. See? We gotta take those parked vehicles out, man. They're gonna destroy this town, bringing in their parked vehicle families. So dumb. And threatening the owner of the vehicle because it was parked in their... Oh, because the parked vehicle was taking their designated spot. Yeah, of course. The two suspects were arrested for menacing and criminal mischief. On April 9th at 5:56 p.m. report... At 5:56 p.m. report of hit-and-run damage to a parked vehicle. This is not a good month for parked vehicles. At 11:38 p.m., when officers attempted to stop a speeding vehicle, the suspect vehicle fled, but was later located, and the driver was arrested for DUI and attempt to elude. Obviously, don't run for the cops, dude. On April 10th at 2:30 p.m., response to a report of a customer at a restaurant leaving without paying for his meal. Officers met the suspect in the parking lot and arrested him for being a felon in possession of a firearm and a restricted weapon and carrying a concealed weapon. What about for stealing food from people? He should be arrested for that too. There are starving children all over the world, and that dude ate all their food right there. On April 12th at 12:45 p.m., response to a report of an intoxicated and confrontational person urinating on a trash can and threatening nearby residents. I just can't imagine that scene of a person peeing on a trash can and threatening people that walk by. The suspect threatened officers before being arrested for disorderly conduct and probation violation warrant. On April 13th at 3:32 a.m., while on a routine patrol, an officer approached two individuals parked in an uninsured vehicle in a residential neighborhood. After determining their identity, both subjects were taken into custody. The first subject was arrested on two outstanding warrants from Lincoln and Lane counties, an outstanding warrant from the Florence Municipal Court, and an Oregon State Parole Board warrant. The second subject was arrested on two outstanding Lane County warrants. Drugs and stolen items were seized from the vehicle. At 6 p.m., report of damage to a parked vehicle by an unknown person. Because why not? We've gone almost a whole week without it, right? At 7:30 p.m., an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration was stopped. The driver was arrested for DUI, aggravated identity theft, forgery, felon in possession of a restricted weapon, and a criminal in possession of a forged instrument. Her passenger was also arrested for aggravated identity theft and forgery. Sounds like a good crew to hang out with. On April 16th at 4:10 p.m., response to a hit-and-run crash. This is not to a parked vehicle, so that's good. Based on witness information, officers located the hit-and-run driver, who was arrested for DUI and for hit-and-run. On April 18th at 9:24 p.m., report of two people inside the bathroom of a closed business. One individual was arrested for an outstanding Clackamas County warrant, and the other was arrested on two outstanding Canby Municipal Court warrants. And also for being in a bathroom after the place closed, right? I guess not. And finally, on April 19th at 8:22 a.m., we gotta end the month just so strong. Report of hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. Just icing on top of that cake.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or no.
That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, Do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.